Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Grassroots Sport and Business Show here on Spectrum On Air with me, your host, Dave Johnson-Rayner from Koi Sports, and John Woodcock from Voluntary Action Leicester. Hi, John, how are you doing?
I'm very well indeed, young man. How are you?
Well, I'm very excited. I'm very excited about what we're about to do with the show. We're taking a slightly different format, as you well know.
I'm excitedly nervous.
Absolutely. We are joined. We are joined by three amazing people, and three amazing human beings, but three amazing business people as well. And in a change to the format of the show, we're going to be debating some topical subjects, topical issues that we believe you that are listening will find very interesting. And what we're going to do now is open up the floor and let people, the guests, introduce themselves, and then we'll crack on with the first question, which I will reveal to you once everybody has said hello. So, working in order on my Zoom screen, we start with Mr. Patrick Burge. Good evening, good afternoon, Patrick.
Good something. Hi, yeah. Dave. Hi, John. Nice to be here. Patrick Burge from Smorgasbord. Yeah, just pleased to be here. I'm 2 minutes on my background. Two knee, sports scientist originally, played a lot of rugby, and two knee operations, a hip operation and a shoulder operation later. Here I am. So I work in and around Loughborough University, partly in sport, partly in other guises. And I run a business. We help businesses on government programs get finance and strategy around their businesses. So really pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you, Patrick. And you and I have known each other for a while, haven't we?
Unfortunately.
That's great. Say nothing to that comment. Obviously, I'm not going to lie.
This tees us up for the rest of the show beautifully. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, moving around the Zoom meeting, the lovely Caroline Purvey. Good afternoon, Caroline.
Oh, good afternoon, David. And hello, John. Delighted to be joining you here today. I'm all about shaking it all about. TRE UK is my company. Unlike well-being modalities that work from the outside in, I share with people how to work from the inside out and focus on healing physically, mentally, and emotionally, which is a big topic, not just nationally, but globally. I'm also a yoga teacher, so all things body well-being is what I'm about.
Fantastic. And again, I do use the TRE UK treatment on a regular basis, on a weekly basis. So that's an interesting one, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about that a little bit later. And then last but by certainly no means least, Mr. Dave Allen. Good afternoon, Dave.
Yeah, good afternoon, all. I can still say Happy New Year. It's only halfway through January. So my background, actually, I'm originally from East London, but I was a youth worker for over 30 years, mostly in and around London, dealing with teenagers with all the sorts of problems in those areas that you might expect. And I stumbled across Herbalife Nutrition almost exactly 20 years ago when I was signing on the dole, do you believe, at Clapham Junction. Not the station, there was a job centre over the road. And there was an ad there saying work from home. I was desperate, didn't know what I was going to do. I got started, got on the products, got a great result, but it wasn't until I actually worked on myself, my mindset and my attitude, that I actually started to do the business, got back into youth work and was made redundant almost 8 years ago. And now I spend my time, I'm 63 in 2 weeks, put that in your diary so you can send me a card. I spend my time playing football, just come off the tennis court, and helping people improve their health in so many different ways, and also offering people an incredible income opportunity regardless of their background. So that's me.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, it's great to have you all here. John, I believe you know all of these people anyway, don't you?
I do. I do, through many conversations over the last few years, kindly introduced by your good self, DJ, and through obviously, you know, the work that I do with the radio show, but obviously the volunteering that I do with Koi Sports.
So I'm calling this the dream team, John.
I like it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And if this ever goes on YouTube, you'll see exactly why there will be a calendar coming out for 2023 with all five of us taking various poses for various months of the year. Pre-orders.
That sounds wrong.
It usually does when it leaves my lips.
Absolutely.
But listen, we're here to debate some topics, and I love what we're looking to debate because it relates to business, but it relates to entrepreneurialism and relates to well-being and opportunities, you know, for people. Mm-hmm. We come out of school and we go and get a job, supposedly. That's if we were any good at school. And if we weren't, then maybe the options are limited. However, we all have different skill sets. And going into normal employed life, like so many people do, there are a percentage of those people who go, I fancy doing a bit of this myself. So the first topic that we're looking to debate, we're looking to talk about, is about going from employed life to an entrepreneurial life. And as this was a suggestion put forward by Dave Allen, I'd like Dave Allen just to say a little bit about the pros and the cons, through experience, obviously, of what that entails, and the scary bits, but the happy bits as well. Dave, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, it was a subject I thought of because I would imagine you just mentioned, actually, that most of us, the way we're educated, certainly of an older generation, is you go to school, maybe you go to university, you get your qualifications, and then you come out and you get a job, in theory. And that was, you know, true many years ago. But these days, and certainly with what's been happening recently, that's not always going to be the case. And how many students come out of university nowadays? Back in the day, I used to get a grant, so I didn't have any debt. Nowadays, they come up with a huge debt, no guarantee of a job, and virtually none of them actually go into the profession they studied. But yet we're trained to be thinking as an employee. And so, particularly in my business, people come to it normally in a job, the vast majority. And if their thinking remains job focused, they don't tend to succeed in the business, because as we all know, in business, we don't have a boss normally. We're the boss, we're everybody. So we need to take responsibility. In a normal job, which people are in, they have a boss normally, or several. They have certain restrictions on when they can work and where they can work, who they work with, and they're conditioned and told what to do, when to do, and how much they're going to get paid. And so to transition from that to becoming an entrepreneur can be quite challenging, especially if you're running the two alongside, which a lot of people do, because to jump from a job straight into a business with no income is a bit of a challenge, which some people have done. But by and large, most people transition. And then you have to get the mindset right. And I know we've discussed this before in terms of people I recommend, but one of the great resources I recommend is a guy called Darren Hardy, who's got a CD rather, called Making the Shift. It's not anything to do with network marketing, and you can get it on YouTube as well. We will get the ads in, but it talks about how you make that shift from being an employee to an entrepreneur. So in other words, from being someone who just turns up, does what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it, to someone who actually says, if it's to be, it's up to me. And if you're running the two together, as I was, it can be a bit of a challenge. I don't know, did other people in this group also transition, or did you jump straight into a job? I don't know, did you go straight from a job to a full-time business, or did you kind of do a little bit and gradually move over? That's quite a good question to ask.
Who'd like to answer that first?
That's a very good question to ask. And, you know, I think about this often, Dave. I wake up in the morning as an entrepreneur, and I've been an entrepreneur most of my life. And I don't say to myself, oh God, I've got to drag myself out of bed and go and work for that organization, right? I'm the boss. I wake up and think, what am I going to do today to change people's lives? And when I've got that attitude, then I earn the money. And when we are falling a bit light, then we give ourselves the kick up the backside to get going. But it is a mindset. And I think that, well, you know, okay, the whole world can't be entrepreneurs because nobody would be doing the jobs. And there are jobs that we need people to do. And I think that takes a certain mindset as well, that we do need people to make products. We do need people to bake cakes and sell them to us, you know, for somebody else. And there are good employers out there that look after those people. It does take a certain mindset to be an entrepreneur. Now, The longest I was employed for was one thing I didn't say, is I went into education because I did my degrees, having been self-employed in retail for many years and various other self-employed from selling double glazing right the way through to you name it. I went into education, did my degrees late, and I finished up in teaching. And I taught business studies, which was my skill set, but from a live perspective. And I totally agree with what you say about, I was in charge of careers as well. And young people, I'd take them, I remember taking a group, and this is some years back, to one of these, what they called milk round fairs. And I couldn't believe how many organisations were looking for degree qualifications to sell something on the telephone. And you're right, the jobs, you know, are not there, or the career paths as they used to be, because I remember you left school, you did a job, and if you didn't like it Friday, you'd got a new one by Monday. It was a cherry picking exercise. Yeah. So 17 years I spent in education. I was a free agent, if you like, being head of department in the schools. But then I came back out and was hungry to get back to working for myself. But as a yoga teacher, I was running my business on the back end of my days, the end of my day at school. So it's always been in my blood, and it always will be.
Yeah, it's a great question to ask, and one which I'm interested to hear from John and Patrick about. And you've got five minutes before the break. Patrick,
I'd just like to pick up on something that both Caroline and Dave sort of touched on, which is suitability. You know, I've got, and speaking as a parent, actually, I've got two daughters. One of them went to university, you know, straight A student at school, straight A student at university, did very well. And the other one got to the end of school and said, I'm not doing this anymore. Mm. I did tertiary education and worked a bit in work at times at Loughborough University in and around that sort of environment. But I think it's all about suitability to what you do. And I'm not sure I subscribe to the theory around entrepreneurs, and different labels and definitions. Because actually a lot of people are entrepreneurs who I come across. I'm an advisor for the government on a thing called the Startup Loan Program. And frankly, sometimes my role in that is to tell people to go back and get a job, you know, yeah. Because it's not suitable for everybody. And one of the things that really changed my view of all this was there's an amazing guy called, he died recently, Sir Ken Robinson, his name is. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book called The Element. And it's about the third most watched TED talk ever that he did. And he has a saying, I think I get this right. He said, the question that society asks of you is, how intelligent are you? The question society should ask you is, how are you intelligent? So it's all about understanding different types of intelligence. And I read his book and read quite a lot into all this. And I think, observing my two daughters and their journeys, one of them is now a tremendously successful self-employed business person. You know, she left school, went and got a job, and she's, you know, doing her thing. And the other one went to university and is doing her thing in that way. So I think a lot of the debate around this is driven by the Industrial Revolution and how we created so-called education and the 40-minute lesson when we can only concentrate for 20 minutes and all that stuff. Mm. And it'll be, you know, there is enlightenment coming, hopefully, around all that.
I'd have to agree. As somebody who, I mean, I left school with 16 with GCSEs. I got my GCSEs through the skin of my teeth. I didn't like school. There was a couple of subjects that I really, really liked, and that was kind of about it. Ironically, when you touched on the Industrial Revolution, my best subject was history, and the history I took was actually the Industrial Revolution. That's not to say that I remember half of what, you know, I remember, like, you know, Stevenson and the rocket and the trains and that kind of stuff. But I left because I just thought, I don't fit. I can't see how that's going to work for me personally. And I went to try and go and get a job in 1990 in the middle of there wasn't that many jobs going about. I remember actually typing out 42 letters to try and get a job. So I went and got a job because I didn't know what I wanted at the time. I just knew that I didn't want to stay in education. And throughout a lot of my, you know, my working career, I've been employed until I got to a point about 10 years ago. And then I stepped out, become self-employed, and I loved every single minute of it. The role that I have with Val is an employed position, but ultimately I was running my self-employed business at the time as well, which I had to close down in the pandemic because it was costing me an absolute fortune to keep running. There was no money coming in other than what I was doing in an employed role. Moving ahead, what Dave was saying is that I am going to be doing pretty much what Dave said, which is I'm going to have a job, which will allow me to pay the bills and keep the wife happy and feed the kids. I suppose I ought to do that, really. But then the other part to it is that I will be setting up and working with organisations on proactiveness and their business development and their relationship management and engagement with their current and new customer base. And that's something that I've been doing for 25 years. I'm really looking forward to stepping back out and doing it and hopefully building that up so that I don't have to have like a part-time employed role as well. So I do think it comes down to those types of individuals, and suitability would be one of them. Is it suitable for them to become an entrepreneur, or is it suitable for them to become an employee? It really comes down to you as an individual and your mentality and your drive and your determination. And I suppose the other part to it is, have you got a mentor, somebody that you can work with and bounce off and build on your workplace mentality? And I use workplace where, you know, in the loosest sense, in that, you know, is it an employee workplace or is it an entrepreneurial one?
Interesting.
Sorry, guys, I've got to go to a commercial break. We'll pick up on it again. I think the one thing that comes through for me is the excitement or the adrenaline or the stress that comes along with it. But yeah, we'll look forward to exploring it all in part two. Enjoy the commercial break, everybody. Speak to you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Grassroots Sport and Business Show here on Spectrum On Air. I hope you enjoyed the break. A bit of dab dancing to some of the tunes and what have you from the five of us, which will never, ever be aired. In the first section, we were talking very much about going from employed life to entrepreneurial life and recounting an experience and what have you. And I kind of rudely cut across Patrick Burge as he was about to make a point due to the commercial break. So Patrick, over to you.
Thanks, David. I was just thinking about a lot of the work I do is involved with franchising. So, and I was thinking about how just taking what Caroline and John said and you, Dave, was about how franchising is a way of working for yourself, but actually working within a structured environment and probably with a more established brand and so on. So you're not starting from scratch. And it sort of occurred to me also that my daughter, who didn't go to university, built up her business in network marketing, funnily enough. And and I think that's been that for her, it was a way to earn incredible money, but also established product, good discipline. And I came at it from a point of view of what's this network marketing thing? And I now view network marketing as a completely valid, proper business model, no different from any other type of business. And so I know that Dave Allen, you're involved with it, so you probably got more to say about it than I have.
Yeah, well, as I say earlier, I stumbled across it through desperation, and I didn't have any money. I was unemployed. The beauty of most network marketing companies, in fact all of them, is that startup costs are very low. I mean, franchise costs, I know, vary. But the average person can get started with a network marketing company with next to nothing. Ours is less than £40 to get started. And many people have built up multi-million-pound business or multi-million-dollar businesses worldwide through the company. Because it gives everybody, as I say, I used to be a youth worker. So for me, and I'm sure for all of us, equal opportunities is really important. Mm. So it doesn't matter about your age, your background, your situation, qualifications, experience, etc. Whereas if you go for a job, they're going to ask to see your CV. They want to know your experience, your qualifications. So if somebody's 18, for example, 18, 19, are they really going to get a decent paying job? Probably not. They'll be working in a fast food restaurant or a coffee shop to start with. And they might even have a degree coming out 21, 22 and doing that. And if they're past 60, say, and they still want to earn some extra income, they're probably not going to be able to get a decent paying job either. Well, the beauty of our company, and I've seen it, is, you know, people in their teens that are earning very good income. And by the time they're 25, they've even got a mortgage through the company. And my neighbour, Dawn, I love telling her story. I'm in Woking, by the way. And she's 88, very healthy, great grandmother, and earns well into six figures a year. She doesn't need that money, but she can spend it on her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren. But she started at 64, didn't think she could do it. Because our company is just a company of stories from all over the world, all different backgrounds. And the beauty of it is Patrick mentioned earlier, you know, when you do a franchise, you're not on your own. In our company, you're independent, but you're not on your own. You're not tied in to do anything. And that's part of the double-edged sword of being the entrepreneur, is that there is no obligation. If you've got a franchise, you've normally paid quite decent money. So you've got a commitment there. There's a bit more skin in the game, so to speak, with the network marketing companies, because it's so low, it's very easy to say, well, if I don't do anything, I'm not going to lose anything. But you don't see what you could have had over a period of time. And the personal development that we get through the mentors and people like Jim Rohn, which I'm sure most people have heard of, to actually help you become the person, because, you know, if you can become the person, you will earn that income that you want. So as Jim would say, here we go, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. If you get your mindset right, and people supporting you to do that, and all the examples, you believe in yourself, which is the biggest challenge that anybody has in our type of industry, self-belief. And we can help people come from being a shy, introverted person to standing on stage talking confidently to 20,000 people. And I've seen it from all over the world. And that's the beauty of the industry. Anybody can do it, but most people won't reach the top, like in any industry, because they have to have the right mindset and the desire to get there.
Really interesting. John, what do you think?
I think there's a big debate that we could have with regards to the franchising versus network marketing, which could probably take up a radio show in itself, which probably, you know, we'll look at in the near future. I think there's room for all of it. You know, whether it's employed, whether it's self-employed, whether it's franchising, whether it's network marketing. You know, I looked at some network marketing. I've got a book somewhere. It was a really good book. I read it. It literally took me about half a day to read it, which is, you know, not unusual for me, to be fair. But it was all about network marketing. I'll have to find it. It's not over there. But I think the concept of that, there are some beautiful concepts that you can take out of network marketing and put through in any type of organization, whether that's, you know, a startup business, whether it's a charity, whether it's an international conglomerate. It can take those concepts. And I know that sort of with the franchising option, I think that's a brilliant way for people to expand that business, but also expand themselves and actually give them a good foothold in their location. Dave mentioned that you might have to have a little bit more skin in the game with the franchising. I think he meant money more than anything else. but I do see it as a viable option. And I know that you know, with franchising, it can be done in so many different variations, and it could be that you put like a little bit. It's like, you know, buying a car sometimes, isn't it? It's sort of like you put a little bit down, but you pay more back over a period of time, and you know, or you put a big lump sum down and pay less as it goes on. So I think there's opportunities available, probably more so today. You know, as we come out of this pandemic, fingers crossed. You know, that it's been brought upon all of us now, where you've got these opportunities available, because people have had that, you know, that ability to look around and see what's going to be right for them and their families or them as an individual.
Interesting. And I mean, Caroline has had the benefit of sitting there listening to all of those opinions.
I just wanted to say, you know, network marketing many moons ago went through a very bad phase. So it was, don't go there, don't touch it. You'll end up with a garage full of water softeners or whatever else was out there at the time. And people did. So it's interesting how it's become more of a focus for today and deemed to be a good business platform, because, you know, it does cut out the need for everybody to have shops or offices and things like that, the working from home, the being mobile, and the reaching out any which way you choose. So yeah, a good debatable subject. And another one I throw in is, you know, there's another debate in there about why people don't stand on the stage and talk and have that confidence.
Yeah, I think, doesn't that come with experience, the whole confidence thing? I know some people err towards being extremely confident and others don't. And even if they are confident, some of them don't want to stand up there and speak in front of 20,000 people. Don't you think, as you sit here, that a lot of what we're able to do now is because of the experience we've had, whether it be through self-employment or employment?
I would argue the experience can come from negative ones as a child, which is why people don't have their voice and their confidence and their lack of self-belief.
Do you think it's also with that, it's what you're comfortable with personally as well? I mean, you know, I have this discussion with my 14-year-old. He's more than happy to stay in his room on his PC playing his computer games. He's not the most social person in the world. He's great, whereas I'm quite happy going to talk to anybody and everybody. Dave will tell you. You know, I'm more than happy. But again, I suppose that's through years and experience of what I've done as a job, which is, you know, when I went networking, if I saw somebody standing on their own fiddling with their phone, I'd make a point of going over and having a conversation with them to bring them into the room, as it were. There's nothing worse than going to a networking event and standing on your own.
Yeah. I think for me, my youth work skills, I think we've all had kids or whatever, but, you know, teenagers are notoriously the most difficult group to kind of, as an adult, to engage with, especially inner city young kids. And I developed that ability pretty much 99 times out of 100 to be able to create a rapport with a teenager who I didn't know, who was suspicious of adults in authority pretty much all the time. And so that skill means that other people, almost by definition, are a lot easier. So I can connect with people from all different backgrounds fairly well, quite quickly, because of those skills. I learned, like, just to give you an example, you know, the other day I'm at a football match, there's a young guy there standing there watching the game. I get him to video me. He's watching his mate playing for Exeter against Sutton, actually, on his debut, watching the game. And I got him to video me for Facebook. We had a conversation. He came along to our presentation on Sunday at Heathrow. And the other day, I'm taking out the bins. There's a guy standing in the bin cupboard waiting for the lorry to come along because it was raining. Jamaican guy. We had a chat in a bin cupboard. And, you know, I've got his name and number. We're going to have another chat. And so that's the beauty of the skills that we've learned in the past that we can bring to what we do now. But communication skills, people skills, computers will never replace that. And our business is a relationship business. So if you've got those skills, then they'll always be useful for you.
I was going to say, I think what we found there, Dave, is that Dave Allen talks more than I do.
I'm one of those people who came from a background of it's about people who have to do public speaking, and they prefer to be in the casket than giving the eulogy. They were that scared of public speaking. still even today. And I went on a course and learn, as bad as I am now. I learned all the badness I am about now from actually going to learn how to do it and putting myself through what was hell on wheels for me, absolute hell on wheels. Because I'm actually an extrovert, but I'm actually in front of a lot of big group of people, a shy extrovert, and they are. And it's interesting when you talk to psychiatrists and psychologists about this, there are introverts who are very good at speaking to rooms of 200, 500 people, and there are extroverts who aren't. And it's not about being extrovert or introvert. I think it's really firmly about practice. There's no such thing as a good public speaker. The fundamental thing is that really good public speakers practice a lot more than people who aren't good at it. They do it more often. They practice. They have a technique. They might have a prop, you know. And I think that's just the truth of the matter.
Absolutely. I think that's it. And sometimes you have to force yourself to do things, whether you're employed or self-employed, and you might hate them. And I love that analogy, by the way, Patrick. I think that's brilliant. And you know what? The thinking about doing something as opposed to the actual doing it is often the worst thing. And I know that's nothing revolutionary, nothing new, but it still rings true. You know, God, you get wound up before you go and do it. But once you're there and you're doing it, you haven't got a choice. You might as well crack on. And I think your mind automatically switches to that.
No, I agree. I mean, I did a talk recently to a room full of 40 people. I'd not stood up and spoken in public, you know, for, oh, I don't know, it must be about 5 or 6 years. The last time I'd done that was to a room full of like 300-400 people. And that, I was fine with that. I was scared witless to stand up literally almost like a table length away from 40 people. It was awful. But once I'd started, I was all right. I'm a fairly comfortable and confident individual, I think, when I'm talking to other people. But that was quite a scary prospect. I was scared right up until the point where I started talking.
Yeah. That's that fear analogy, isn't it? False expectation appearing real, whatever you want to phrase it.
It was like, I got my backup notes, I got them there. I made sure my hands were sort of like away, in pockets so that they couldn't see them shaking. It was very uncomfortable, but as soon as I'd done it, I felt brilliant.
And what did the jury say at the end of it?
they sent me down, which is why I've been a little bit quiet.
you're actually part of the school from your underground bunker, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm not allowed out.
And that's another thing, as I mentioned before, about the person who's relevant. We take people, they come to it new. They have that fear of speaking on stage, and we get them up for little short bursts. And gradually they get, through constantly doing little bits and a little bit more, they become confident public speakers, even though they've never had any formal training.
I just want to sort of come back to Patrick a little bit. So we've touched on the sort of the franchising aspect a little bit. And I know that, you know, there are so many different variations of it out there, and I'm wondering whether there's more that we could do with this in the next sector or section or in another show, because I'd be intrigued to know more, if that makes sense.
I'm with you on that, because I'm the only model of franchising I can remember was you had to earn X thousands be in business for so long, and then you might qualify. So I'm gathering things have changed, and I think it would be very interesting.
The world of all business models has changed, and there's a lot of dead wood being removed from network marketing, pyramid center, whatever you want to call it, and franchising and distributorships, because laws and compliance have come into a lot of industries. And that's, and like them or hate them, lawyers are important, and it's creating compliance is absolutely vital.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Really interesting. Really interesting. Sitting there listening, all kind of singing off the same hymn sheet, all with different experiences, and what kind of all knits that together from a personal point of view is personal well-being, something which I know Caroline knows a lot about, first-hand experience of that. And I think when we come back after the break, we'll explore that a little more. I think the thing is for us on this radio show is that we're putting some stuff out there that if people are interested to talk with anybody on this, guest on this call, it's just really to get in touch and we'll put on a one-to-one. But really looking forward to the wellbeing thing, because we all need wellbeing, whether you believe it or not, whether you think you're the most resilient person in the world, you all need it. Because I'm sure, as Caroline will tell us in the third part of the show, a lot of it you had no control over, because it was from when you were when you popped out into this world. It's a very interesting topic. Thanks so much for joining in. We're going to come over to the third section after the commercial break. And thank you. Enjoy the commercial break. Good afternoon and welcome to the Back to the Grassroots Sport and Business Show here on Spectrum On Air, where we're debating a number of topical subjects in and around business life, accounting ideas. And over the past couple of segments of the show, we've talked about very businessy things, admittedly some personal, some to do with the actual running of a business. But in this third section, very keen to look at an extremely topical subject, which is well-being, whether you're self-employed, employed, whoever you are, whatever age you are, so important to look after yourself. And of course, we have somebody on the show, Caroline, whose business is that. And it'd be interesting to hear from Caroline at this point, her views and her opinions on workplace wellbeing, maybe, whether that's employed or self-employed.
Thank you very much, David. Well, you know, I maintain that health actually is your greatest wealth. If you are an employer of thousands of people, as many organisations are, in the service sector who we work with, whether you're self-employed, if you're not in tip-top health, physically, mentally and emotionally, and they are all connected, then there's a huge cost that comes with that. I was talking to staff at a school a while back. They had no idea how many days absences between them they'd had off in the previous year. And I'd done my homework on that. And whilst their guesses were, well, 30 to 90, they were actually in the hundreds. And I said, for every member of staff, that's a month off work. And what is the impact of that in terms of cost? And it's the same for any business. You have to pass the bomb to somebody else. The pressure's on them. It costs the company financially for sick pay, so on and so forth. I don't need to spell that out. But I came across a program 10 years ago and I found myself in South Africa learning something else about the body. So for 30 years, alongside all that other work I've done, teaching for 17 of that, I've been a yoga teacher and fascinated about the physical body. So well-being was already my focus. But when I learned this practice, it was a complete complement to my yoga, but it was something that I found myself working with. It was an experiential practice. But 10 years later, absolutely fascinating, and I ended up writing a book about all the stories that were shared about the profound healing. And we all have the ability to heal ourselves. I have this idea. I used to say, stress is a silent killer. But now my mantra is, if we don't do something about our own stress, you know, we're killing ourselves. We're on a sinking ship going down. I had to give a talk the other day to 70 people and excited to do that because I have an exciting message. I want to imagine this. You know, I reference everyone as being a stress bucket. Your stress bucket fills with your history. We're all on a sinking ship going down. The heavier the bucket gets, the quicker we go down. Because the body cannot cope without releasing from those symptoms that manifest from stress, overwhelm, or trauma. And in this image, you see the ship going down and you see people in a rowing boat, you see people swimming. And my message is, that the ones that survive are the ones that do something for themselves. And the program that I empower people with is to do something for yourself. And it's an animal practice. It's to do with the muscle in the body, deep in the body. And the only one that can access it is ourself. And we are animals. And just as animals shake and tremor before they carry on with what they were doing, they don't hold the adrenaline and cortisol that comes from stress in their body. And when we go through that process of releasing that tension, the cause of our stress has disappeared. And then we all need the amazing things that are available to us to keep ourselves in that tip-top place. And that is your exercise, that is your nutrition, that is your talking, your coaching, that going in that direction and knowing that there's nothing holding you back. So that's where I come from in terms of well-being. And the miracles are abound when people can just crack on and empty their bucket without the need for appointment, without medication. And I'm stopping there. I'm saying, okay, what are you going to say about that one, guys?
It's interesting. I mean, thank you, Caroline. I mean, it's very interesting. Like I say, I use your treatment. Everybody else on this call, how do you handle stress? Because I think Caroline's right. We just take on stress and deal with it. Don't necessarily get rid of it.
I got lucky, actually.
Yeah.
I have really supportive parents. So people, the older you get, and I'm 94 now. For 94, I look all right. You meet a lot of people and end up finding out quite a lot about a lot of people. It's amazing how many people have got some things or something from way, way back, maybe childhood or, you know, trauma, you know, somewhere in their life. And the older I get, if somebody asks me what was your childhood like, I go, brilliantly boring. I just had two parents who were really nice people who, I did wrong things. They told me off. I did right things. They said, well done. So the older I get, the more grateful I am for having just a really boring, normal 1970s, 1980s upbringing, you know, stole a few apples, fell out a few trees. And that's it. And then I decided to be a happy person, not a sad person. I've made a fundamental decision to be happy, grateful for what I got, happy for where I am, ambitious for the possibilities of the future. That's how I handle it. And do I get it right? Not by a long chalk. Ask my wife, not all the time, but that's my end of it.
It's interesting. It is that. And a lot of it stems from your upbringing, doesn't it? How you handle situations and what have you, just make you. But you, Dave Allen, you don't seem like you're overly stressed. That probably because you're quite sporty, I would imagine.
Well, that's actually quite a good release, actually, because one of the best ways of actually handling if you're feeling tensed up is to move. Anthony Robbins talks about change your state, you know, move. But I'd certainly agree with Caroline about your health being your first wealth, and dealing with that with a lot of people, especially blokes, actually, that I'm dealing with at the moment, who have got very busy businesses and careers, and they're all in their 50s and 60s, and they're not looking after themselves. And I often say to them, if you looked after your business the way you looked after your health, would you still be in business? And they look at me, or they're on the phone, and they say, well, no. I say, well, what's more important than that? Surely. But yet still they carry on doing the same thing because it's their habit. So a certain amount of stress is good for us to a degree, because it, you know, like anxiety to a degree, we're going to play a sports match or we're going to talk on stage. If we don't have a little bit of anxiety or stress, then we're too relaxed. We need to have a certain amount. But it's when it becomes too much, and not just in terms of stress, but in terms of health generally. World Health Organization tell us that 70% of people's health issues are lifestyle created. So, if you're stressed, that's one of the biggest killers as well, because it affects your whole body. As Caroline said, you know, your emotional and physical well-being are very much linked. And so you can't really have one without the other. And rarely is someone excellent in one area and very poor in the other. They normally have a good balance. But, you know, I went through a very difficult time nearly 20 years ago, which I highlighted before, where I was out of work and I was very stressed and life was not good. And I must admit, I had a lot of dark thoughts. But by getting support and talking, which is what men typically aren't very good at, especially of an older generation, is they tend to keep things in. Maybe that's why the suicide rate amongst young men particularly is much higher. You know, stress needs to have an outlet, and if you keep it all bottled in, somewhere it's going to come out, and it might not be in a good way. So talking to people, being able to listen to others, even if you can't change that for them, that's often a great way. And I think women are much better at that than men in terms of talking about that to relieve the stress that they get. And obviously there's lots of other ways that you can do it, but you know, I just focus on the fact that I've been through a very tough time. And I've got through that. So when something else comes my way, I just remind myself, hey, you got through that. That was the worst time of your life. You can deal with this. And it's your self-talk that really helps as well.
Back to that experience, life experience that you've had. Mm. Yeah, interesting. Interesting. John, you consider yourself to be laid back. I'm probably, well, most people that know you consider you to be quite laid back. Does that mean no stress?
Yeah, I think the thing is that I learned a long time ago is that, you know, in whether it's work or whether it's personal, I observe a lot. I like to hope that I'm quite observational in what I do, and I listen intently to the conversations and the discussions, or even if there's no talk going on whatsoever, that silence actually speaks volumes. So I like to be able to sort of then take that and then build into having a chat, you know, and working with those people and having a really great professional relationship with them, or having really good friendships. Ironically, I'm a big advocate for mental health and well-being. Some years ago I went through some very, very dark times, and, you know, sought counselling, and I say quite loudly. In fact, we did it on a show recently, Dave, didn't we, where I said, I'm a recovering depressive. But I wake up with a smile and I go to bed with a smile. And that's not to say that I don't have grey days, because I do, but I don't have dark days anymore. I'm a much, much better person. But, you know, I try and be quite vocal about this type of stuff, because there are still going to be men and women that won't speak up because they don't think it's right to. It's better to bottle it all up, which then obviously causes stress issues, anxiety, et cetera, and can go, you know, to very, very dark places. But we won't go there. It's, you know, it's having that ability to sort of, do you have a support network, whether it's one person or 12 people, that you're comfortable and confident enough in going to have a conversation with? Because if you haven't, find it. And there are ways to do that. And there are, you know, there are great people out there that you know, far more skilled and far more qualified than I am. But I've had a conversation this week with somebody who I've known for a very, very long time, and just said, don't be shy. Don't be scared about picking the phone up and having a conversation. I won't talk to you, but I will happily have a conversation with you. And we've been out and had a walk and a coffee.
I love everything you're saying, all of you, and you know, this is illustrated in our bucket world that we teach in. We have lots of little taps on our buckets, and all the things that you're doing and done, they're all the little taps. But the one big tap we have, you have yet to discover. And that is something incredibly powerful. I was asked to review a book. And when I looked at the book, I had connected with this guy on LinkedIn, and I thought, wow, with your history, ex-military cop, I want to talk to you. And when I did, I said, the first thing I said to him is, I guess your book is about how you've gone through a lot of trauma and you come out the other side. And he said, yeah. And I said to him, and I say it boldly, and I say it to everybody, I don't care what you've done to get to the other side. You still hold that tension in your body's muscle memory. And he enrolled on the program, and now I've read his book. We're having great conversations, because what's coming out for him is his history, layer by layer, and he totally, totally gets the cherry on the cake that he's discovering. It's fascinating, because we're animals. And Professor Gordon Turnbull, leading voice in trauma psychology, world leading voice, first thing he ever said to me 10 years ago, we have to get it out of the body, because talking just doesn't do it. And yes, we all need outlets. Otherwise, we're just, like many do, they self-combust. And I hate that word, suicide. And we are coming into suicide season, which is why it is important to talk. But it's a fascinating subject.
Yes. I mean, I've got a quick question to ask, because we're often towards the end of the show. It's a Patrick rule. With your working franchise, do you work with franchisees past the point of setting up the franchise or buying the franchise?
Yeah, we can do, but mostly the secret to that is that the franchisor, you know, the business that sells the franchise. Mm-hmm. So I do two things. I help the franchisor be a good franchisor, because that's the secret, because that is what somebody's buying into. Mm-hmm. And it's back to something Dave was saying earlier about being supported by whatever the organization is, you know, be it Herbalife or, you know, Samba Soccer Schools who we work with, or Active Future, or whoever it might be, or Walk and Go, it doesn't matter. It's about the HQ, how they support. Yeah. That's their job.
Is the support within, is the support for workplace wellbeing within those that franchise out their businesses to?
Not in honesty, in some, but I think it's no different in franchisors than it is in any in the business community. You know, people are getting to understand the penny is dropping slowly, but it is slowly. It's a bit like, you know, reducing your carbon footprint in business. The penny's dropping even more slowly in that. But pennies are gradually dropping.
That's a whole different debate for a completely different show. That one, I think. Mm-hmm.
Lots to chat about there.
See what I did there. Just brought it in. Absolutely.
Very, very clever. Listen, folks. Thank you so much. Thanks from myself and John to Patrick Burge of Smorgasbord, Caroline Purvey of TRE UK, and not forgetting Mr. Dave Allen. The networking man on his bike who did 10,000 miles or something whilst he was networking. Absolutely brilliant from Herbal Life. Dave, Caroline, Patrick, thank you so much. John, do you want to make a parting comment there?
I think that has been a phenomenal sort of first outing for our panel discussion. I'd like to thank everybody for being part of it today. I think from those three key sort of like subjects, I think there's quite a lot that we could continue to have chats about outside of this show. And if, you know, for our listeners, if you want to get in touch with ourselves, and if you want to sort of talk to Patrick or Caroline or Dave Allen, we will happily pass your details on. But it's been an honour and a privilege to have a chat with you all today.
Well, I'll say amen to that. It's been great.
Yeah, to quote a famous person, it's been emotional.
What a great note to leave it on. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. To our guests, thank you so much. And of course, to John Woodcock, thank you. See you all again in a fortnight.
Cheers, DJ.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.